would sit, and all of the people would come to her room spot. I compared that against Shmuel. And Shmuel was famous for actually going from place to place, the mishpat, which instead of bringing the, instead of bringing the bring courts to the people to make it more accessible. And that was really a schut of Shmuel. And Shmuel's writing the sefer, and I thought that might be sort of a little negative thing against Devorah, which is that sure, she was a prophetess, that people, and sure, she was a shofetet, but people had to come to her for mishpat, which was much like, if you remember, when Shmuel got old, he set up two kids. His two kids' names were, when he got old, I don't know if anybody remembers them. I'll take a look.
They changed when he was younger than someone else.
Yeah, that's a good point. When he was old, he appointed them as judges. It's in it's in Shmuel Aleph. Here it is. What's that? Oh, I'm sorry. What are you?
No, it's nothing.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't, hopefully,
how's it
going to
look?
No, I love Tanakh, I'm sorry. There's one there.
Oh, she's got.
Yeah, there are a few more. Hold on, let me see what it is. Yeah. And there's probably one.
Shmuel, Yusuf Shofin.
There's one, Yusuf Shofin, and another one. So we have two more. They're not the best for looking at some sort of stuff, but better than nothing. Now I'm actually in Shmuel. Oh, I'm sorry, I just gave you a Shoftim. Now I'm in Shmuel. Let me read you Shmuel. Vayihi kasher zaken Shmuel, vayasem et banav Shoftim liYisrael. And he essentially appointed his son judges for Israel. Vayihi shem beno abachor Yoel. His oldest son was named Yoel. V'shem mishnehu Aviah. Another one was named Aviah. Shoftim beBe'er Shava. They hung out in Be'er Shava, which is interesting because that's deep in Yehuda territory. V'lo halchu banav v'drachar. His sons did not go in his ways, and one of the things that they took bribery, they bent justice to go along with the money. Now, I'm not saying that that's Devorah at all. There's no reason to assume at all that Devorah is taking mishpat. But I thought that was interesting that what the Malbim said, that she would stay in one place and people would come up to her mishpat, struck me as sort of damning somebody with faint praise, because where the Malbim looks at as rather positively, I don't think it really is positive, because the whole idea of Shmuel was the fact that he would go around from place to place. And then the more I looked at it, the more I realized something very interesting. And here's where I'd like you to, if you can, take these the papers with the text on it. I have one for myself, so I'm okay. And I essentially photocopied, I copied the entire chapter of the seventh chapter of Shmuel Aleph, which is Shmuel in his height. This is the height of Shmuel before the king age, and before his sons turned, before he got old. Take a look at the highlighted part by line 20. By spoke Shmuel el Yisrael kol yimei chayav, and Shmuel judged Israel all the days, all of his life. The halach, and he would go, midei shana b'shana, every year, the savav Beit El, he would go around from Beit El, the ha-Gilgal, to a place called Gilgal, which is where the Mishkan first was when the Jews crossed over the Jordan River. The Gilgal is where they set up shop. The ha-Mitzpah was a place that I'll discuss in a second. The shafat et Yisrael kol ha-Mekomot ha-Elo, and he would essentially go from all these places and take justice at these places. Uchuvato haramata, and when he returned back to Haramata, which is his father's place of Haramatayim Sofim. Do you remember that from the beginning? Vayhi ish Elkana ushmo ben Kish. I'm mixing up with Achazverus. Vayhi Elkana men Haramatayim Sofim. Oh yeah, Vayhi ish Elkana men Haramatayim Sofim ushmo Elkana ben Elitzuf and somebody ish Levi, if I'm not mistaken. So essentially, he goes back to a city called Haramata, Kisham Beito, Visham Shafat et Yisrael. And there also he judged Israel. So where do we have him judging Israel? We have him in Beit El, we have him in Gilgal, we have him in a place called the Mitzpah, and we have him in Haramata, which is in his own home, which is in Har Ephraim. I think it was, I'll tell you for sure.
All those places you mentioned are really in the same general area.
They are. They're all in Shevet Binyamin, except for, and I brought some maps to show you, except for Haramatayim Sofim, which was in Har Ephraim, actually in Ephraim territory. Now, if you would, take a look at on this map, this large map. And you know what? Before we do that, let's compare those words which I just read you to Devorah. If we look at Devorah, where did it say that Devorah actually ruled? We thought she was only in one place. But if you read it carefully, what do you wind up with? If we go to where Devorah is, this is in chapter 4, in Shoftim, chapter 4, verse 5. V'hi yoshev etachat tomar Devorah, ben haramah, you see that? Uven betel, behar Ephraim. Now, how does this, an interesting translation, if you remember, there was an interesting translation of Targum Yonatan, what?
She had money that she had fields in one place and houses in another.
And what, do you remember what Tomer was? Because Tomer was a fig tree. So how did Targum Onkelos define Tomer? It was fig trees in which specific city? It was in Yericho, which is right next door, of course, to the Gilgal. Mm-hmm. Right? It's down in the same territory. And that's why I'd like you to take a look, some of these maps should help. Now, I want to point out that Haramah is not Haramata. There is a difference. Where is Haramah? Haramah is essentially right north of Neve Yaakov of today. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at Yerushalayim on the map, and you go north, you get to Shuafat. Shuafat is the town right next to Pisgat Ze'ev of today. If you go north, that you get to Neve Yaakov. That's about as far out as Yerushalayim goes before you get to essentially Ramallah. You're pretty much in El Bira and Ramallah. And then Haramah is right above that. It's right below the Stei Tufa Atarot. There's a little airport there. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you see where that is, Haramah? Now that's not. It's right above the word Binyamin. It's right above the Yud Binyamin. Now that's obviously what's being described here by Devorah. So she would go from Haramah to Beit El. Now, as we said, the tree that she was sitting on, I doubt she was sitting like in the middle of nowhere. Although, if you do draw a map between Beit El and Haramah, exactly in the middle, where do you get to? What city? Hamitzpah, which is also a place where Shmuel is judging. Now, again, Haramah is not Haramata. Haramata is all the way up on the upper left-hand side. That's Haramatayim Tzofin. You see that? That's where Elkanah was from. That's where he judged. So most of the places where he judged, he would walk around Shevet Binyamin. And then, of course, he would go home because that's what his house. He was doing Ramatayim Tzofim. What's interesting, though, is that Shmuel, who's writing both Sfarim, is describing the cities that he's judging in to be almost identical, actually, to the place where she's sitting. Now, if we read the Pasuk simply by Devorah, it just sounds like she's sitting in one place right in the middle, sort of like you would draw a line in between all these places. Yoshev Tachat Tomar Devorah, Ben Haramah, Ben Beit El, Behar Ephraim. But if you then put all those things together, Har Ephraim sounds a lot like Ramatayim Tzofim, because it's actually north of Binyamin's territory. We got Haramah, which sounds like Haramata, so even though it's not the same thing, there's a similar language. There's Beit El, the famous Beit El. There's in the middle of the two, which is Mitzvah. And the way that Targum Yonatan is understanding Tachat Tomer, apparently from some Mesorah, because you can't just make that stuff up out of whole cloth. Some Mesorah leads Targum Yonatan to say that the Tomer was specifically the Yericho / Gilgal area. If you see Yericho, it's above Yam HaMelech to the side, and Gilgal is really maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles from that. Mm-hmm. So, as I was reading this, I agree with the Malbim, but not for the reasons Malbim said. The more I read this, the more I'm convinced that Shmuel is painting a picture which is comparing Devorah's justice system to his own. I don't think reading this and knowing that there's a comparison between the two, that in fact she sat in one place. My guess is that she is wandering around Shevet Binyamin, doing justice much like Shmuel does. And that actually is a very fine phrase. It's a very fine phrase. It's very interesting.
So what's the point of Tamar Devorah then?
If you go with Targum Yonatan, then Tamar Devorah maybe points us to the Yericho Gilgal area. Maybe. It's a little bit of a stretch, but I don't know where else Targum Yonatan gets it from. Targum Yonatan translates, let me read it to you, he translates...
Did she live in Entourage?
What? I'm sure she had a justice system. In fact, the only reason you go really from place to place, because these places weren't very far apart. It's not like you were going like up north and down south to allow people to get in. What you're really doing is setting up multiple court systems. She probably left behind her, because she was probably like the traveling chief justice that would go to your major circuit courts and sit with those circuit courts and help judge for a period of time. And then when you would go to another place, they would essentially building up a good court system. Because again, even by Shmuel, you can't say that he was traveling to make himself super accessible to the people. He's traveling around a rather small area. People still have to come to Shevet Binyamin to get justice. So you could only, the only thing that makes sense really is that he's trying to spread out the wealth of the court system within Shevet Binyamin, rather than saying that he's trying to bring justice to the people. Why Shevet Binyamin, by the way? And something which I've discussed before, but it bears repeating. Shevet Binyamin is the Shevet of Shechinah. Every single Mishkan and Mikdash shows up in Shevet Binyamin, bar none, bar one, which is Shiloh, which was destroyed. What's interesting, by the way, is that the one place where she doesn't go to Mishpat, where you figure she would go to Mishpat, is Shiloh. Shiloh, in fact, is ignored during the entirety of Sefer Shoftim. You simply won't find Shiloh anywhere, because essentially Shmuel is making a point that Shiloh, and the truth is the point is even more so made at the beginning of Shmuel. Shiloh was in a state of disrepair. It was in Nishtahir and Nishtahain. It was neither, we actually have digs of it. It was half tent and half solid building. So it wasn't quite a Beit HaMikdash, and yet it wasn't quite the Mishkan. It was never, but the Bama was there, but essentially Shiloh had a lifetime during the Shoftim, and yet it's ignored during Shoftim. Three chapters into Sefer Shmuel, it's destroyed. The city is conquered by the Plishtim. It's razed to the ground, and they move, the Mishkan moves to a place called Nov, Ir Nov, and the Aron travels around. First it gets captured by the Plishtim, and then travels around. Bnei Yehuda and Beit Shemesh are stupid enough to open it up, and then as soon as they say, we don't want it here, where does it go? It goes to Kiryat Yearim, which is, of course, in Shevet Binyamin. Binyamin was always supposed to be the center of justice, court systems, Mishkan, etc., etc. What's that?
Didn't Shiloh remain as sort of the religious center of Israel for 300 or 400 years? That's not an insignificant period of time.
It was during the entire period of the Shoftim, which would date, I think, approximately about 300 years. But what's interesting, you're right, absolutely at the center. But what's interesting is it's not mentioned once. It's in Shoftim. Not mentioned once. It doesn't appear. If I'm not mistaken. Well, that's what Shmuel's trying to say. You know, for all you have a Mishkan, which is the center of religion, how many people are going there? The answer is pretty much nobody.
Ailey is not
meeting in Shmuel. Yeah, exactly right. He is actually from
Shmuel. But it's still 300 years, an insignificant period of time that it sat there, and so to say that, you know, the only thing not mentioned that wasn't even Yom is Shiloh, that's not the only thing. That's a very significant period of time.
Time-wise, but the religious influence is clearly not, you know, there's no centrality.
I mean, that was
Elkanah's.
They were there.
Yes, that was Elkanah's big thing. Elkanah was considered a supi holy man because he actually came three times a year to bring Kabbalah. That was considered to be so unusual as to define a super Jew at the time. Actually, you're right. He only came up once a year. And still he was considered, you know, to be really dedicated to the Mishkan. And that was considered super dedication. So you feel throughout Sefer Shoftim that there's a lacking there. Part of the lacking is Kabbalistic. It's the fact that Shiloh is the wrong place for Mishkan because it's in Shevet Ephraim, where a Mishkan does not belong. That was the only time Mishkan or Aron ever appears outside of Shevet Binyamin, which is a shear that we're, you know, it's a shear for later on when we talk about Shevet Binyamin, but it's something that's important to know. Binyamin, of course, is the only son who was born in Eretz Israel. There's a lot to talk about there, but not for right now. So when I look at this, I say, wait a second, I see a similarity between Shmuel. Shmuel is essentially writing Dvorah's story, much of the description of herself. And that immediately tells me, don't stop there in Perek Zion of Shmuel. Look at all of Perek Zion of Shmuel and see what you can see. And all kinds of interesting things show up. So I underlined a bunch of stuff on this page. There's all kinds of cool stuff. So let me read you Shmuel Aleph. I realize we're supposed to be learning Shoftim, but what the heck, let's do a little Shmuel Aleph. What? Vayavo, starting from the top on line number one. Vayavo Anshei Kiryat Yearim. These are the people who had the Aron at the time. They went down to Beit Shemesh. What happened is the Aron went to Beit Shemesh. The people looked inside, they got flames. Remember, lots of people died. So they realized Beit Shemesh was not the place for the Aron to be, because Beit Shemesh was in Shevet Yehuda, among other reasons. The Aron went to the place, it was stolen by, it was taken in war by the Plishtim. They moved it around and it started smashing all of their gods and there were plagues, etc., etc. So they put it on this wagon, Shades of David's wagon, and the wagon went all the way up to Beit Shemesh, which at that time was the border between the Plishtim and Israel. By the way, when we get to Shmuel, you'll see how bad things were. Think about it. Beit Shemesh. You know where if you've ever driven to Beit Shemesh, that's already, you know, you're almost to your slime, essentially. You're already in where the hills start getting steep. That was the border between Plishtim and Israel, which means Israel had really been crushed to, half of Shevet Yehuda had been taken away by the Plishtim. When we get to Shevet Shmuel, people don't realize that essentially it opens up where the state of Israel is really quite... Think about today, if Aza was not up to Aza, but it was up to Beit Shemesh. Think about that. And I think you could start to realize what essentially an existential risk Israel was at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. But that's from Sefer Shmuel. So the Aron went up to Beit Shemesh. It stopped at Beit Shemesh because that was the Israeli border. They put it on this rock. They opened it up, and all of a sudden there's this big plague. They know they're doing the wrong thing. So they call people from Kiryat Yearim, which is a Binyamite city, to get this thing out of here. So they take it to Kiryat Yearim, and that's where it sits for a long time. It sits there, the Aron sits there, separate from the Mishkan, which is in Nod, until David decides to move it to Hartzion, to Yebus. Sit there in Kiryat Yearim for a long, long time. Vayavon shek Kiryat Yearim, v'alu et Aron Hashem, and they take it out of Beit Shemesh, vayaviyu oto el Beit Avinadav v'Givah, to the house of a guy named Avinadav in Givah. Givah is another name for Kiryat Yearim. The Givah, by the way, if you take a look on your big map, you'll see where it is. It's right below, it's in between the Ramah, which is where Dvorah is, and Yerushalayim. So it's essentially dead center in, you see where it is? It's by Neve Yaakov of today. It's really in Yerushalayim of today. Mm-hmm. Northern.
So is that line the king's Derech?
Yes, that is Derech Melech. Yes. Actually, I'm not sure if that's Derech Melech, but it was a major stop. That is the north and south road that you travel to. You used to travel today. When I lived in Shiloh for a while. So there's this windy road, I don't know if you know it, that would leave Yerushalayim from the north, it would go through Beit El, it would pass by Beit El, and it would wind around to Shiloh. You would take that to Har Levona, and then it would go through this massive down spiral down to the Shechem area. I don't know if you remember this. This is the same road that we have today. It's the same one. I don't think it was a Derech Melech. I don't think it was that big. But it was certainly a major path, a cut through it. Oh, I remember helping build David, actually, in 1984, and at that time it was only like 8 little tiny scoobyog, and we all went to help.
5,000 residents.
Yeah.
They're not there anymore.
What's that? Yeah, a lot of people left. Yeah. Really good.
Smart.
What are you going to do? Where were we? I lost my place. Oh, yeah, okay, so let's go back to the story. So that's where Kiryat Yearim is. The Ed Elazar Beno Kidesh, we actually took his son Elazar. Now this is not a Kohen, this is a Binyamite. So he actually is Makish his son, because Binyamin has a special status. Binyamin is the closest thing you can get to Kuna without being Kohen. Lishmor et Aron Hashem, his job was to guard Aron Hashem. Vahimi yom shevet Aron b'Kiryat Yearim, vayirbu ha'yamim, vayu esrim shana. That automatically tickles me. Why does that tickle me? Why is esrim shana tickle me? We have Esrim Shana in our story. Take a look back in Shofin Dalad Aleph. Actually, in Dalad Gimel. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem, ki tshami ot rechav barzelo, v'hu lachatu b'nei Yisrael b'chos ka, Esrim Shana. Now again, if you just had those Esrim Shana, you couldn't make much of it. But now I've got two comparisons in one parak, when we're talking about essentially the rule of Shmuel. One is the 20 years, interesting enough. 20 years of hardship during Devarah's time, as opposed to 20 years of peace during Shmuel's time. And I also have this situation where Shmuel is judging in the same place as Devarah. Now I've got two things in common. So I figure I'm not happy with two. Let's look on. So if we read on, let's go to, we can find other interesting things. So let's just read through the chapter. In Pasuk Gimel, which is line 6 on this sheet. Vayomer Shmuel kol Beit Yisrael imor, im b'chol levavachem atem shavinu l'Hashem. If you're truly doing tshuva with all of your heart, hasiru et Elohei ha'nechar mitochem v'asherot, get rid of all the avodah zarah. Vachinu levavachem, and prepare your hearts al Hashem v'avdu levado, and worship Him alone. V'yatzel etchem v'yad pushtim, He will save you from the pushtim. V'yasiru b'nei Yisrael t'valim et asherot, v'yavdu et Hashem levado. So He makes them do tshuva, right? What does He do immediately after they really do tshuva? V'yomer Shmuel, kipsu et kol b'nei Yisrael ha'nitzvata. Bring them up to Hametzpata. Now, Hametzpata comes from the word Sofeh. It's a visual place. It's the highest place in the area. It's a lookout point, essentially. It's also rather flat, by the way. You can move a lot of troops onto the Mitzvah. So he gathers together.
It's both.
Mitzvah and mitzvah. Yeah. Here it's referred to as mitzvah, but I think it probably just depends on the. I never quite tell the difference between a segol and a. I know that they call a patach. They call a patach a tseiri. I'm sorry. A tseiri is called a patach chalash. So there's a crossover between the tseiri group of A and A and the patach group of A and A. You ever notice that sometimes things are like alu resh and alu rash, which means get up and conquer, get up and conquer? I don't think it's because there's a significant difference. I think it's because of the word that comes afterwards affects the sound of the vowel underneath that word. So mitzvah and mitzvah are essentially, they're one and the same. I'm not a grammarian, though, so please don't take my word for these things. But I'm fairly sure that they're pretty much the same. By Yomer Shmuel called it, where was it? Oh, yeah, Pasuk Hey, line 9. So he gathers them all together in mitzvah. Now, obviously, if you gather together all the Israel at the highest point of the Binyan meeting, the Philistim are going to hear about it. That Palel Ba'al Adonai, and I'm going to pray to God for it. Vayikbetzu ha-mitzvata, vayishavu mayim, they draw water, vayishpechu l'fnei Hashem, they do this water ceremony. Vayatzumo, we'll get there, you know, in a month or two from now. Vayatzumo v'yamahu, and they fast on that, vayomru sham chatanu l'Hashem, it's a yom song. Vayishpot Shmuel l'fnei Yisrael mitzvah, and he judges them there. Vayishmu plishtim, ki katzu b'nei Yisrael mitzvata, so plishtim here, the Jews have got together mitzvah. Vayalu sarnei plishtim, you see that word vayalu? That's going to be very important. El Yisrael, by Yishmur B'nei Yisrael, by Yerum B'nei Plishtim. They were very scared. Pasuk Chet, which is in line 12. By Yerum B'nei Yisrael Shmuel. So the children of Israel say, the nation of Israel says to Shmuel, Al Tacharosh Mimenu. Don't be silent. Mizaok El Hashem Elokeinu. Notice that word Mizaok, because that's going to be an important word by us also. By Yoshienu Miad Plishtim, and save us from the Plishtim. Vayikach Shmuel play chelav achad. They took a fat tale is a what's a tale? I don't know, it's one of those a sheep?
Yeah.
It's a sheep, right? I always have problems with sheep, goat, calf. I can never remember which one. Vayaleu olah kaliyo. They bring us. It's an olah. It's a full olah. Hashem. Vayizach. There's that word. Vayizach again. Vayizach Shmuel Hashem ba'ad Yisrael. Vayanei Hashem. God answers him. Vayihishmuel maleu olah. So he's in the middle of sacrificing, and who comes to ruin the party? The good old Plishtim. Well, Plishtim, now on my fatigue, Mikshu and Ochem Abishra. They start attacking them. Vayareim Hashem b'kol gadol b'yom ahu, and he shakes them up with a great noise. Al Plishtim. Look at the next word. Vayehumeim. You see that word, Vayehumeim? Vayinatful l'fnei Yisrael. Vayitzu anshei Yisrael mitzvah, vayirdoful Plishtim, vayakumad mitacha b'beit par. They actually successfully battle them just to a place called Beit Par. Vayikach Shmuel Eben Achat, he takes a big stone. Vayasem Ben HaMitzvah Uben HaShem, and he puts him in between the Mitzvah and the Shem. Whatever this, the Shem is the tooth, but it means obviously this big jagged rock that they had managed to battle the Plishtim down to. Vayikrat Shma Eben HaEzer, they call it Eben HaEzer. Vayomer Ad Hena, until this point, Azrenu HaShem, which means God was willing to help us up to here, and afterwards we started losing, so we figured we'd turn back and let the Plishtim be. But, Vayichneu Plishtim, the Plishtim became subjected. Why are these words important? Please take a look. Without turning back this page, take a look at what's going on in the story of Devorah. If we go through the battle in Sefer Devorah, what does she tell Barak to do? In Pasuk Vav, she tells Barak, gather all the troops together, and Har Tabor, which is, by the way, if you take a look at this map, it doesn't really, I'm sorry, I didn't print many of these maps, I apologize, but Har Tabor is a set, you know what, I actually put something, so I'm not sure it's going to work out that well, but let's give it a shot. This is a hiking map of Israel. If you hike around Israel, you can't live without one of these things. Let me get this up. Just so you can see where Har Tabor is, compared to Emek Yisrael. Now we know the cities that are owned by the Plishtim at this point are Megiddo, Beit Shan, Tanakh, Megiddo, all of these places, Beit Shan actually wasn't by name, but it was in that area. All these places are in Emek Yisrael, Haroshet HaGoyim, all these places are owned by the Knanim. Now if you take a look at them, by the Knanim, exactly right. Where is Emek Yisrael? You can actually, it's a little far to see. Emek Yisrael is this gigantic, you see Emek Yisrael? It's this gigantic flatland. All of it is absolutely flat. except for this mountain area here, which is called Givat HaMoreh, which we're going to meet in Dvorah's song. She's going to sing about it. And then here is a perfectly round mountain. Every time you have one of those lines, it means it goes up 10 meters. It's actually this perfectly round mountain. I have a picture here of it. If you've seen Har Tabor, it's really quite startling. I'd like to show you the picture because it's really worthwhile seeing. So essentially, it's totally flat land with a bunch of sheep grazing there, and you have this completely round, very high mountain. This round, very high mountain is right here, Har Tabor. It overlooks the entire Eretz Yisrael, which is owned, of course, by the enemy, as we'll find out soon. So essentially, when Devorah says, when you read these words by Devorah, which are, you gather all your troops together, take 10,000 soldiers, that's a lot of soldiers, and move them here onto Har Tabor, a humongous force, essentially. And what does she say? In Pasuk, Aseret Alfei Ish Mibein HaFelim Ezvon, that's Pasuk Vav. In Pasuk Zion, in verse 7, in Shoftim, it says, U'mashachti Eilecha, and I will draw to you El Nachal Kishon. Nachal Kishon is a river that runs under Har Tabor and goes essentially all the way. Here is called Mayanei Kishon, and it goes all the way pretty much almost to the, if it doesn't go to the Mediterranean, it goes almost to the Mediterranean. It's this really very big river that flows the length of Eretz Yisrael. And she says, I'll draw to you Sisra, Sar Tzva Yavin, the general of Yavin, at Rechbo Vet Hamono Unetatiha Biyadecha. Now how does she know? It's not like she's going to walk over to Harosh HaGoyim and say, would you please come fight with us? What does she mean to say? If you gather your troops together at Har Tabor, what's going to happen is that Sisra's going to see you're gathering 10,000 troops on the top of the outlook of his territory. What he's going to do is he's going to come and fight you. That's shades of what? That's shades of Shmuel. Shmuel gathers the people together in Mitzvah because he knows that the Plishtim are not going to put up with that type of force, and the Plishtim are going to come and fight. But there are other things which are also parallel. Do you remember the two words Vayizak and Vayalu? If you take a look on line number 11 in Shmuel Aleph, it says, after he gathered together all the people in the Mitzvah, it says, Vaya'alu Sarnei Plishtim. All of the armies of the Plishtim went up to fight against Shmuel and his armies. Vaya'alu is also used by us. Take a look at Pasuk Hei. That's true. Pasuk Hei is for Mishpat, but it also shows up in, let's continue reading on it from Pasuk Chet in verse 8. Vayomer Leah Barak, after she tells him to go up, he says, In Telchini, if you go with me, Behalachti, then I'll go. In Lo Telchini, Lo Elach, but if you don't go with me, I ain't going nowhere. I'm not going anywhere without the prophet. We'll discuss that in a little bit. But Tomer Haloch Elechimach, I'll go with you. Ephes, but you gotta know it's not worth anything. Because the moment I do, I'm translating it simply, it's more complicated. Lo Yetzfiartacha, Aladerach Asher Tolef, your glory, therefore, will not be on the path that you take. Ki Biyadi Shah Yimkor Hashem Etzisra. But Sisra will be given into the hands of a woman. The simple Shaila Pasuk, it means her. If I go with you, you should know that I'm the man, so to speak. I, the woman, am the man. And therefore, I'll get the glory. Vatakam Dora Vatalach in Barak Kedsha. So she goes to his home city of Kedsha. I'll show you where that is in a second. But first, let's read on. Vayazek Barak et Zvulun, then Naphtali Kedsha. And look what it says, the next word. Vayal Duragla Vaseret Alfei Ish. And he gets together his foot soldiers, 10,000 people. What word is used for baraks, gathering together the soldiers? Vayalu. Vayalu l'nochama. What's interesting is it's a shadow. It's a negative. Just like it was 20 years here of quiet and peace, here is 20 years of pain. Here it's the plishtim yalu l'nochama. But, I'm sorry, in Shmuel it's the plishtim yalu l'nochama. And here it's our good guys yalu l'nochama. But if you remember, if you go now to line number 14, on Shmuel, it uses the word Vayazek. You see Vayazek? Vayazek is a funny word. It comes to the word probably Tzak also, which means to cry or to gather with cries. Vayazek Shmuel El Hashem Ba'ad Yisrael. He prays or he calls out to God for the sake of the Jews. Vayaneinu Hashem. The word Vayazek also appears in our Parsha, but guess what it means? Let's take a look. Pasuk Yud Bet, let's continue on. in Pasuk Yudbet, verse 12, Vayagidu l'Sisra, and it was told to Sisra, Ki ala Barak ben Avinom har Tavor, that Barak ben Avinom went up to har Tavor. Vayaz'ek Sisra, and Sisra calls his forces, El kol rechbo chamiot rechav barzel v'cholam asher yitom ha'korosh v'ayom nachav kishon. You see what's going on here? Vayaz'ek is used by the good guys and say for Shmuel to indicate a call to God as opposed to a call to war. What's that? In which, in where?
In Shoftim.
In Shoftim. Pasuk Yud says, Vayazek Barak et Zvulun.
The good guys using the same verb.
Exactly, yes, you're right. That is, both calls to war are also Vayazek. Now the word here shows up Vayazek, but here it's not used for war. It's used as a call to God. Because remember, Shmuel's pretense for taking them up to the mitzvah wasn't actually military, even though he surely knew that the priesthood were going to respond to such a show of force, but it was actually a religious call. So their comparisons, the verbs are being used, although they're being flip-flopped around to how they're being used. There's one more word which I want to show you that's a convincing comparison. When Shmuel actually conquers the priesthood in line number 18, in Pasuk Yud Gimel of Shmuel, it says Vayichneu haPlishtim, which means the Plishtim were suppressed. V'lo yaspu od lavol b'gvul Yisrael. Now, take a look at the end of Perek Daled, where the Jews win the war, and what does it say? In Pasuk Chaf Gimel, in verse 23, after the forces are battled and Sisera is dead, what does it say? Vayichna Elohim b'yomahu et Yavin Melchnan. And Yavin Melchnan was suppressed by the Jews. You see that? So both of them, you have Vayichna'u. We have Vayalu, means go up to war. We have Vayizaku, which interestingly enough appears as a religious call by Shmuel, but as a military call by Dvorah. But there are too many comparisons to miss. I mean, you can't, and it ends off with this idea that they're both judging, but they're judging in exactly the same places they both have 20 years. When I'm reading this, I'm saying Shmuel, who wrote both Sfarim, is trying to tell us something. To my mind, the one thing that's missing from Sefer Devorah that appears in Sefer Shmuel is, remember, we had an issue. We discussed yesterday. What happens? All the people start going up to Devorah, and she's in Neviah, and she judges the people. The only thing we don't see in Devorah that we've seen in every single previous time is that the Bnei Yisrael called to God, and God sends a prophet to lead them to Tshuva. What we said last week is that we just assumed that Devorah did that work, which is probably true. The Radak says that the Ralbag, I read your Ralbag, that it was because of Devorah that she got people to do Tshuva, and the reason why they're all coming up to her is because she got them to believe in God. And all that is fine and good, but what's interesting is when we compare these two parshiyot, they're identical in so many ways. The big difference is when Devorah calls them together, she called them together for war. Vayizaku, not at Barak. And also Sisra Vayizaku. When Shmuel uses that same word in his Sefer, it's not a call to war, it's a call to what? It's a call to God. It's a call to Tshuva. Now, I'm not saying that there was no Tshuva done by Dvorah. There must have been Tshuva, they never would have been successful. But it's interesting that the Parshat are so identical. We get the good guys, they gather together, the bad guys see it, they come to war, they get beaten, they get destroyed, they get suppressed, and they've got the judging going on, everything is so identical. But what's really missing is that the tshuva in Shmuel is explicit, and the tshuva by Devorah is implicit. It's interesting, right? It's an interesting difference between the two cases. What is Shmuel trying to say? It's hard to say. Again, I don't mean to cast aspersions on Devorah. I think that by saying that Devorah behaved in the same way Shmuel did, I think that's a positive thing. But I think he's trying to say, I think he's trying to make a point that I can't successfully make unless I go to the second part of my shiur, which is, I'm sorry, I didn't repeat, the one other word, which is very important, by the way, you really can't skip because it really seals the whole thing together. During the war, in line number 15, it says, Vayareim Hashem b'kol gadol b'yom ha'ru al-pishtim, v'yehu neim, and he shakes them up. Right? He shakes up the Plishtim forces. What does it say by Devorah? Take a look at verse number 15 in Daled 4:15. And what is when it says that God is winning the battle, what word does it use? Vayaham. Same word. You see that? Identical word. He shakes up, God shakes up the Plishti forces, and he shakes up the Emory forces. Oh, and one other thing which I think you can't miss. I'm sorry, I know that there's so much here, and I'm like, I'm beating a dead horse. I know I already proved it, but the more I throw onto the fire, I think the higher the fire will burn. There's a very strange verse at the end of the Shmuel section. Look at verse that starts on line 19. In Shmuel, on that page. But Tashovna, after the war is all over, I've really had enough. I know everything I need to know. And yet there's this other pasuk which is very strange. All the cities that the Plishtim took, Israel, from Israel, will return to Israel. What are they? Ekron, Gat, Bulan, all these places which are Plishtim cities. Hitzil Yisrael miyad Plishtim. And then look at the next seven words. Very strange. Vayihi shalom, and there was peace. Bein Yisrael, ubein ha'amori. Why is that interesting? Because she's fighting the Amori. The Canaanites, the other name, the general name for the Canaanites, of course, is the Amori. So it's also kind of an exact switch. We don't really need to know that Shmuel's made peace with the Amori, although it's very interesting. But what's interesting is the same people that Dvorah was going to war against, Shmuel feels that it's necessary to make peace with in order to conquer the Plishtim successfully. So it's really a very interesting switch where you've laid out the entire parsha. They're incredibly similar, and yet almost mirror images of each other in some ways.
You know, that they're very similar linguistically simply sort of reiterates that it's the same author.
Right.
You know, Bible critics, for instance, will say that these periods of time are clearly the same, or authors were the same, and they were not at the time of Moses because there's this linguistic similarity.
So it's more.
So, well, I'm differentiating, between that and Shmuel. But the points that you make, while they're interesting, are not necessarily indicative of anything other than common authorship.
Well,
same verbs, same,
I would have said that. I agree with you. I would, if I just had the word Vayizaku, I would have been okay with that. And Vayalu, and I would have been okay with that. But the fact that she is judging in essentially the exact same places that he is judging. And the 20 years also, I mean, I don't know if the 20 years is significant, but it's the only two times that we see a 20-year period, one by Dvorah and one here. And the fact that it's not only linguistically similar, but it's militarily similar. I've got an enemy of massive forces. I gather together my tribes, and then immediately the other people, the enemies, get pulled together because they don't like all those troops. If it was just linguistic data, I would agree with you. But I think that it's more than just linguistic. And because it's both linguistic and thematic, I think it becomes a much more. I think that Shmuel is not just. It's not just the same author. I believe Shmuel is trying to make a point. I have no proof of this, by the way. Don't get me wrong. I have absolutely. There's no proof of this. It's a theory. But I think that there's more than just the linguistic side here. Now, in order to fully, I guess, say what is the point that Shmuel is trying to make by Dvorah, is to understand what the war of Dvorah is all about. It's important to understand what the war of Dvorah is all about. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that Yavin Melech Hatzor wasn't Yavin Melech Hatzor. How do we know this? Because Yavin Melech Hatzor got destroyed in Yoshua's time. Yoshua destroyed the city completely, and there is no more Hatzor left. The confusion that the Bible critics, actually now that you mentioned, the Bible critics say it's the same story, but they didn't know where to take place, so they wrote it in two times. What's their proof? Their proof is when they introduced Yavin in Pasuk Bet in 4:2, chapter 4, verse 2, it says, Vayim Karem Adonai B'yad Yavin Melech Knan Asher Malach B'chatzor B'sar Tzva'o Sisra V'hu Yoshe B'charosh L'Goyim. So the Bible critics want to say that it was Sisra who was living in Charosh L'Goyim, which means Yavin was living, of course, in his hometown of Chatzor. First of all, I've mentioned a lot of times. It doesn't say who molech b'chatzor. It says who malach b'chatzor. Second of all, the who is not, because of the vav ties the who back to chatzor. How do I know that? Because it says, v'sar tzva'o sisra, v'hu yoshev b'charosh l'goyim. If it said v'sar tzva'o sisra, hu yoshev b'charosh l'goyim, then of course it would be referring to sisra. When it says v'hu yoshev b'charosh l'goyim, that seems to tie, it's just like the previous vav is tied back to he is the warrior of Yavin. He, Yavin, is sitting in Charosh L'Goyim. And this is the way the Radak explains it. If I read to you the Radak, it says very simple. He's actually very sharp, because even the Radak apparently has heard the criticisms. He says like this. Mashini Sharu Meoto Mishpacha, the remainders of that family of Yavin, Haku the Charoshet HaGoyim, they went to Charoshet HaGoyim, which by the way is in the Haifa area, V'nityashru Sham, V'hamelech Mikra Gamken Yavin, and they called this remainder of the Yavin period, they called them after the name, right, like, I don't know, Henry VIII, Kamo HaMelech HaRishon, just like the first one. And, let's see, does he say it more specifically? No, he doesn't. Somebody else does. I'm not sure who. But again, the point being that Yavin himself was not Melech Hatzor. How could you ultimately prove this with a map? If you take a look, if you happen to have this small map, you'll see something very interesting. Kedesh is north of Hatzor. You see that? Kedesh is north of Hatzor. Which means that in order for Barak to take his forces down to Har Tabor to wage battle against Yavin or Sisra, where would he have to cross paths with? He'd have to walk by Chatzor, which of course makes no sense whatsoever. If Yavin was really the powerhouse of Chatzor, Chatzor would really save the time, there's no way that Barak would have crossed the territory. Not only that, when Sisra runs away, where does Sisra run away to? He runs away to Yael, who lives where? By Kedesh Naphtali. Why would Sisra pass by Chatzor on the way up to Kedesh if Chatzor was not a totally destroyed city? So the point here, I'm not sure, oh, I'm sorry, I know what the point is. The point being, so the other proof that Yavin is not Melech Chatzor is that no other time that Yavin is mentioned in all these stories is he called Melech Chatzor. If you take a look at Pasuk Chaf Gimel, in verse 26, it says, Vayichna Elohim Vayomahu Yavin Melech Knan. You see that? Not called Melech Knan, Asher Malach L'Chatzor. Every time that Yavin is mentioned afterwards, it always says Yavin Melech Knan. The question then is, if he's not ruling in Chatzor, what do I need to know? And if I'm not going to make a big deal every other time about saying he's from Chatzor, why do I have to mention specifically that he was a descendant of Chatzor? Okay, I know, I see his name is Yavin. I get it. I remember. I read Sefer Yoshua. I remember there's Yavin there. It got destroyed. I'm sure his people came down. They named him after it. Why do I have to call him? This is Yavin, Asher Malach, once upon a time, Malach and Chatzor. Why do I need to make that throwback to Chatzor, which is a non-issue anymore? I believe it's because it's tying together the battles of Yehoshua to this battle. And here I want to make another point, and then I'll return to another point, then I'll return to that and make it stronger. This is the only time in Sefer Shoftim that the enemy is internal. This is the only internal enemy of the Jewish people. Otniel ben Knaz fought the Aramites from Syria. Melech Moab was the enemy of Ehud. The Midianites from across the river are the enemy of Gideon. Every single, and the Plishtim, even though the Plishtim were sort of fighting their way into Israel territory, they're really from Mitzrayim and from that border territory. This is the only enemy which is internal. Inside Eretz Yisrael. This is the only enemy which is left over from the unfinished wars of Sefer Yoshua. So I believe what the point that we're trying to make is, if you didn't already understand that this is an internal battle, that it's an extension of Yoshua, let me remind you that it's an extension of Yoshua, because I'll take a name from the Sefer Yoshua that I don't even need to use here, and I'll remind you that this Yavin is a descendant of the conquest of none other than Yehoshua. So what Shmuel is trying to say about Deborah is she is fighting a battle that nobody else is fighting. She is fighting a battle over, she is the only one essentially fighting Yehoshua's battles, not over the maintenance of a territorial state versus outside enemies, but the very existence of that state among internal enemies. And how is this brought home? It's really brought home by the map. All of this territory, Emek Yisrael, from the Jordan, these flatlands, all the way over, we can't see it here, until the Haifa area, until Haifa Akko, is all owned by the enemy. Every last bit of it. As we go through the Shir of Devorah next time, how are we doing time-wise? I don't have a... What time is it? We're approaching 9 o'clock. Well, we have 8 minutes. All of this territory, every last bit of it, is owned by the non-Jews, with Canaanites, which means that Israel essentially has been split in two at Devorah's time. There's Israel to the south, which would include Yosef, Yehuda, and Binyamin. And then there's Naphtali, Zvulun, Asher to the north. But essentially, Israel has been divided in two, conquered it, in a sense, from within. And if the Canaanites succeed at what they want to do, they'll spread out north and south. Which means Devorah is fighting a very real and existential battle, which also ties us to Shmuel, because in Shmuel's days, the existential battle was against the Plishtim. But by Devorah's time, the Shoftim, the only really existential battle that exists is this one versus the Canaanites. And that's why, by the way, I'm going to bring you a little Torah from Rabbi Yehuda ben Yon. That's why the Shir, the song, is in the format that it is. And this is what Rabbi Yehuda ben Yon says, and I think he's right. If you remember the Shir of Yehoshua, when he conquers all the kings, it looks like this. I'll show it to you. It's one of the most boring Shirin, and nothing against Yehoshua. I hope he doesn't get angry at me. This is the Shir of Yehoshua when he conquers the kings, including Chatzor, by the way. You see that? It's two-column formats. If you think about all the two-column formats Shirin in Tanakh versus Devorah Shir, look how Devorah Shir shows up. It is a 3/2. It's called Malbenim because it's built like bricks. Think back, which Shirim are two columns and which Shirim that we know of previously are three columns? Which Shirim are two columns? The famous three-column shir, of course, is Shir HaTayam. Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Et HaShirah Hazot Lemor. What? Hazinu is two columns. And Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun explains like this. And by the way, next week what I'm going to show you is Shirat Devorah borrows from, it borrows from both, but it reminds us of Shir HaTayam. Let me show you Hazinu. Hazinu looks like this. Two column shear. What Rabbi Yehuda ben Nun says is like this. A two column shear is an incomplete shear. In fact, if you remember, there's a famous chazal that Chizkiyahu sang a shear, but he didn't sing a shira. If he sang a shira, that would have introduced the Messianic age. Remember, it's a very strange medrash. This is a shear. This three column joke is a shira. What's the difference, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Nun? A shear indicates a lack, a two-column shear, is more monotonous. It lacks completion. Why does it lack completion? Because Hazinu was bad news. If you think about Hazinu, it was not a very happy shear. It's about how you're going to go into Bnei Yisrael, and I'm pretty sure that you're going to sin. And these are the terrible things that are going to happen to you when you're going to sin. Yoshua's shear is also incomplete. Why? Because even though he conquers all those kings, he fails to conquer the entire Emek Yisrael, leaving Israel territorially unsound. Shirat Hayam is complete because the Jews have just been transformed to a what? They've been transformed into a nation. They have now left slavery. They are now in a nation on their way to pick up what? On the way to pick up the Torah. Pit stop, pick up the Torah, become the Jewish people, on their way to Eretz Yisrael. Shirat Devorah is also a complete shir because Devorah, with her conquest, has now managed to do something that Yoshua has not, which is combine the divided state of Israel into a single territorial conquest. She essentially finishes Yoshua's job.
And should it be three columns?
It is. It is. That's exactly the point. By the way, David's shear at the end of Shmuel, when he's about to build the Beit HaMikdash, is also three columns, but we'll talk about that some other time. But essentially, that's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Nun says, and you'll notice the difference in tone between the three-column shear, which is very happy. Uri, Uri, Dvora, Uri, Uri, Dabri shear. And look at Shirat Hayam. Azdi Falu Afeyu Dom Elei Moav Yochzemo Ra'ad. You have this great shear, as opposed to a two-column shear, which is kind of a bummer. You know, these things are going to happen to you. Now, there are good parts to a two-column shear also. There are some positive elements in Hazinu, but mostly it's a Musar Shmur. Mostly it's a Musar Shmur. So where I would go next to was I would want to look at the connection that Devorah is trying to make. What I'm trying to say is Devorah, and the way Shmuel saw Devorah, was an attempt to complete the conquest of total Israel. But what was supposed to happen after the conquest of total Israel? Well, I suppose the Messianic times was supposed to happen after the conquest of Israel. The ultimate in Revelations was supposed to happen. And now what I want to do and end off with is just to read you the first few words of Shirat Devorah, which is in Parakeh. Parakeh, chapter 5. Let me find my place. Atashar Dvoro Barak Ben Avinom Bayom Ahu Emor. the four priorities of Israel. I'm not going to translate that right now because we'll get to it in detail next week. Hinadev am b'chua Hashem. When the nation volunteered itself, blessed to be God. Shimu malachim hazinu rozin. First of all, that word remind us of what? Hashem hazinu. Anochi l'Hashem, anochi ashira. It sounds like what? Ashira l'Hashem ki ga'o ga'a. Very similar. Azamer l'Hashem al Yisrael. Hashem b'tzeitcham yiseir, as you left Seir, b'tzadcham yistei adom, Eretz ra'asha, the world quake, gam shamayim natru, the waters fell from the sky, gam avnu, gam avin, even the clouds, natru mayim, harim naznu milipnei Hashem, the mountains dripped from God, from in front of God, zeh Sinai, milipnei Hashem lokei Yisrael. Which means the simple understanding is she's reminding us of that glorious march from Shirat Hayam until Har Sinai, the revelation of Har Sinai. In fact, even the words you may recognize, Hashem b'tzeitcha miseir, what should that remind you of? If you take a look at this sheet, look at Devarim at the very bottom, where Moshe is talking about the glory of the Jewish people. It's on line 45. It says, V'zot ha'bracha asher barach Moshe Yishalim b'nei Yisrael, l'fnei moto, v'yomer Hashem b'sinai b'ai, v'zarach miseir lamo. And he shined out of Seir for them, for his people. Do you see the connections between those two places? Which means Devorah seems to be bringing up shades of Har Sinai, of the thing that was supposed to happen immediately after Shirat Hayam, which was the revelation of Har Sinai. Devorah saying, I'm going to sing this song, which we'll see, by the way, is immediately after the battle was won. That's when she starts to put together this song. I'll prove that next week. And she says,
and
now is...
What? I'm sorry, but why wouldn't you do it after the battle?
Well, it's right after the battle, but not when the battle is complete. If you take a look at Perek Hay, Pasuk Yudet, it says, Uri, Uri, Devorah, wake up, Devorah, Uri, Uri, Dabri Shir, sing this song. And the next verse says, and this is verse 12, 5:12, Kum Barak Ushvei Shev Yichav Ben Avinoam, get up Barak and start taking prisoners. Which means that this Pasuk seems to put us right after the battle is won, but before Barak chases down Canaan and finishes the job. Mm-hmm. So she gives herself a message, which is, now's the time to sing the song, and you, Barak, now's not the time to sit around and rest on your victory at the bottom of Har Tabor. Now's the time to chase the enemy until they're dead, dead, dead. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what they did. They killed them until pretty much there was nobody left, and then Yavin disappeared also. But Devorah singing the songs, I think, is seeing something really fascinating. She's envisioning a reenactment of Shirat Hayam. And in my mind, she's Zeh Sinai. She's reenacting Har Sinai. She believes that what's happening here is equal to the revelation of Har Sinai. And this I'm going to have to go into next time. But I want to read you something interesting, and with that we'll stop. If you have a sitter, I would suggest opening up the Tehillim Samach Bet, the Yavat Tanakh. You know, there's so many beautiful Tehillim, and because they're long, or because they're not the ones... Samachet, which is 68. I'd like to read a little bit to you. I didn't photocopy it. So what time is it?
8:00.
Okay, so we'll be finished in about 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
We're only up by
now. What?
We're up by
9.
I mean
9. Oh, it's 9. Okay. Oh, it's 8. Lanateh David is more sheer. So this is a song that David's writing. Yakum Elohim, rise up, God. Yafutsu Aivad. Scatter your people. This reminds us of course, in Baalotcha, Vayakumu, we find that. This is talking about that messianic time when the Aron was ready to go. It was before the Chet HaMeraglim. Vayehi ben so Aron, and when the Aron would get carried, Vayehi ben so Aron, Vayom Hashem, Kumu Hashem, Vayanusu mifanecha, Vayafutsu, Oyvecha, Vayanusu mifanecha, Misanecha. You know, that whole vision of lightning, you know, very Spielberg, lightning coming out of Aron. The whole triumphant march into Eretz Yisrael is envisioned. That's right before the inverted nuns, where everything goes to heck in a handbasket after the Chet and the Meraglim, where everything disappears. So he brings. The first thing David does is he hits us with this glorious messianic vision of the Aron going and roasting all the enemies. Total conquest. By Yanusu Misanav Mipanav. It's a direct quote from Baalotcha. But then where does he go? Tindof Ashan, Tindof Ki Hames Dona Gitei Ish. It's like it's reminding you of Ashan and Ish, which are the visions of God at night and during the day, and how things melt before the cloud of God and the fire of God. Yovdu Rishaim Mifnei Elohim. All the enemies will be destroyed before God. V'tzadikim Yismechu V'yaltzu Mifnei Elohim. And the righteous will be happy and they'll dance or they'll sing before God. V'yasisu Bin Simcha. Shiru Le'elohim Zamru Shemo. Sing to God, praise his name. Sol Rochev Aravot. Sol was also a sing. By the way, there's the word Sela. If you're wondering what Sela means, this is it. Sol, sing. To the riders there vote, Biyashimo, with God is his name, Be'ilzu Lufana, be happy with him. What am I trying to get at? I have to jump over. Jump to Pasachet, because we're running out of time. Elohim, look at Pasachet. Elohim, B'tzeicha lifnei amecha, as you left, as you went out before your nation, B'tzadcha b'shimon, as you marched out before your Shimon. He's quoting who directly? Quoting Dvorah. Look back at Shirat Dvorah, am I right? Look back at Dvorah's beginning of the song, and he says, what does the beginning of Dvorah say? I need two Tanakhs now to teach this here. Where's the part? Oh yeah, here it is. Pasuk Dalet. Hashem b'tzeicha mi-Seir, as you marched out of Seir, b'tzadcha, as you marched out, mi-Seadon. So here, David says, Elohim, but as you go out before your nation, but Shimon Sela. It's the exact same words. He's quoting Dvorah directly. Eretz Ra'asha, the land shook. This is Dvorah's words exactly. Af Shamayim not fum it me Elohim. Do you hear? Even the skies drip before God, which means David is quoting almost Shir. He's quoting. It's very interesting. You know, if you read this Tehillim, essentially David's borrowing heavily from Dvorah. Zeh Sinai. Look at these words. Zesinai b'nei Elohim Elohei Yisrael. That's Shirat Hayam. Geshem nidavot tanif Elohim. The rain came down. Nachlatcha, and your river will meet the river. Nachal Kishon Tzum. Mil'ata filled up. Atat konata. You got it ready? On and on. And I'd like to, by the way, learn this tefillah maybe a little more in depth, because we tend not to ignore Tehillim. And there's so much beauty here. Which means David brings us two visions and puts them together. The first is the messianic vision of the Aron coming forth. And this, to tie into that vision of the Aron coming forth and wiping out the land of Israel and getting it ready for the Jewish people, he then quotes from Shirat Devarah, saying that's the same image. The skies are pouring, the mountains are melting, there are earthquakes, and God is Tzeicha, and God is Tzadcha. So I believe, if we trust David, that that's what Devarah had in mind. I believe that that's what Devarah has in mind. Devarah believes that she's really finishing the job that was started by Moshe and not finished by Yeshua. And that's why her battle is really probably more special than any other battle. It is, I believe, a messianic battle. Its goal was to introduce the perfect state of Israel with the perfect rulership and to complete what Yeshua was supposed to do in the first place. Well, that's where we're going to run into. And that's where we're going to run into her and Barak. And that's where something very interesting happens. And with this I'll end. I apologize. I always say with this I'll end. In Shirat Hayam, there's one big difference between Shirat Hayam and Shirat Devorah. And I'll give you a hint so you'll know what it is. It's also the same thing that happened, that doesn't happen in Shirat Hayam is what doesn't show up in, what? I'm sorry, what? No, it's the same thing that doesn't show up in the Haggadah. What does never appears in the Haggadah? Moshe also never appears in Shirat Hayam. But if you look in Shirat Devorah, what? Well, it just says, Ma'azir Shem Moshe, but that's it. Once the song starts, there's no mention of Moshe whatsoever. It's God, God, God. In the Shirat HaDvorah, Ad Shekamti Dvorah, Shekamti Yehim B'Yisrael. So I think we'll see it. And again, I don't mean to, you know, downplay Dvorah. Dvorah is an amazing leader, and I think Shmuel is trying to make that point. But I think ultimately this is the point that Shmuel was trying to make by leaving out her Maaseh Tshuva, the Korbanot that I'm sure she had the people bring, and by recounting her song, which focuses, honestly, a little too much on herself, which reminds us of those Gemaras we did yesterday, right? A little too much Dvorah-centric. Even the words that she says, Dvorah, no, Barak, you won't be successful. Ki biyad isha, yitain sisra. It will be by the hands of a woman that sisra won. And this possible...
That's why it wasn't.
No, I don't want to get into that. You know, you keep, David, you keep on, you know, getting into this anti-feminist thing and telling it all.
Yeah,
but the similarities are so stark that some of the differences show up also. And I think it highlights some of the beauties of Dvorah, but it also probably highlights some of the shortcomings of Dvorah.